By the words drawn from chapter 178 of the Principia Cartographica Dominus Imperia, penned by Lord Ephrata Hood, rogue trader captain general of the Omicron 11th Void clan, Scholem Genitor Imperialis, iterator emeritus of the Albion High Colleges, and Lord Admiral of His Most Supreme Imperial Majesty's Great Crusade, Fenris should not be. Nearly every facet of the planet's existence opposes the typical diktats of physics, biology, geology, tectonics, gravity, and ecology. It should have long since been stripped of its atmosphere, or split in two by gravitic stressors. Its biospheric conditions defy all sense. It should resist all attempts at colonization, for it is inimical to human life in every single respect. By all accepted standards of planetary formation, orbital mechanics, plate tectonics, biospheric stability, and basic evolution, Fenris simply should not be. And yet it is. There are many places within this galaxy of ours that defy sense and reason. Strange domains where existence contravenes the laws of science, or basic reality. And that is before one even considers the malign influence of the warp. Wonders and terrors beyond measure, we must count Fenris amongst them. For even by the standards of that particular class of planet, the Imperium colloquially dubs Death Worlds, it is a sphere of purest lethality and deep, deep mystery. Know then that this is a record concerning this unique world, and an exploration of its sundry curiosities. Situated to the galactic northeast of Terra, in the southerly volumes of Segmentum Obscurus, Fenris is itself not too distant in galactic terms from the human homeworld. It is an ice-gripped planet of roiling oceans and frozen mountainous climes, with scarce any variation in this climate on a global scale. The world traces a long and elliptical orbital path around its pale, wan sun, dubbed by the world's human population as the Wolf's Eye. Owing to this wide arc, Fenris spends much of its year in a global geoclimactic winter. The oceans freeze over almost entirely, locked beneath a thick layer of ice that stretches to a thin band of water at the equator. Volcanic vents become rocky islands, spearing out of these ice plains. This so-called hell winter is one of relative stability for the world, but it is fleeting. As a planet curves out of the depths of its orbital path and swings closer to the star, an almost apocalyptic thaw overtakes the oceans. With such massive volumes of water turning from solid to liquid, combined with the gravitic exertions of the star itself, the oceans of Fenris are torn into astonishingly violent activity. Earthquakes shatter the continent-sized ice fields, and oceans boil as volcanic vents are torn in the world's violent crust. The relative warmth creates plankton blooms, which, in turn, create titanic storm systems, racking the skies, and the now furious oceans driving an explosion of activity amongst the planet's sundry megafauna. The seas are transformed into a pelagic feeding frenzy, as each creature struggles to consume as much as they can before the onset of the next winter cycle, and to destroy any competitors for sustenance. At the apex of this passage, the sun's violence cracks the deepest trenches of the ocean asunder. Wholly new landmasses, birthed in the previous summer, are drawn beneath the waves, while others are thrust up anew. There is but one stable landmass upon the world, Azaheim, the northern polar continent. It spears up out of the churning seas, its cliff flanks hundreds of meters high, offering no path through the sheer facings save for the most suicidal of climbers. Quite why Azaheim has endured through the planet's tortured existence is largely unknown. Supposition has been placed upon ancient human geotectonic engineering in the distant, distant past. Although the Adeptus Mechanicus has also posited that it is a mere quirk of the planet's geology and its orbital path. Whatever the reason, Azahaim has ever been a refuge for humanity upon Fenris, having seemingly borne a human presence since the Dark Age of Technology. The planet's first settlements were likely located in the caverns underneath Azahaim's bedrock, those that plunge deep into the mantle to avoid the predations of both climate and fauna. By the time of Leman of the Rus, 6th Primarch and Lord of that Space Marine Legion, the cavern settlements had long been abandoned. It is rumored that during the long dark of the Age of Strife, doomsday cults worshipping foul and eldritch entities arose within the human populations that dwelt within, turning the caverns into charnel houses of sacrifice and bloodletting. While it has been a long-standing cultural practice to avoid the caverns, it is recorded that Rus was the first High King to openly forbid all access to them. Humanity is, of course, far from the only species that claims Azahaim as a refuge. As the only stable landmass on the planet, the continent is also home to the near entirety of Fenris's non-aquatic megafauna. Mastodons, ice trolls, fire dragons, mammoths, wrath badgers, underfangs, glacier worms, the ice cobra, rot specters, sea eagles, snow-blind geists. It is unlikely that any save the Fenrisians themselves have been able to compile a full taxonomy of the planet's fauna. All of these species and many more exist within a hyper-competitive biosphere, one which, despite the lethality of every single animal, is nevertheless robust and exists within a twisted form of harmony. Very few death worlds within the Imperium, save perhaps the infamous Catachan, have as broad an array of such creatures. In almost all cases, a handful of species arise out of the masses, with one becoming the apex predator, effectively dominating the ecosystem, while all below are ultimately subservient to their needs and sustenance. Not so Fenris. Almost all catalog species fulfill the apex alpha classification. Effectively, there is no food chain, because the playing field is a flat circle. Everything is hunted by at least one other animal, in some cases several. The sea is, of course, no less hostile. If anything, it is even more so. The renowned Fenrisian kraken has been documented at sizes that eclipse cities. Their bodies have been documented as reaching some 8 kilometers in length, with tentacles that stretched up to 30 kilometers beyond that. The sheer scale of these animals has led to hypotheses on behalf of the Mechanicus Biologists and Ordo Xenos that the creatures are in fact remnants of an ancient Tyranid splinter fleet that was injected into the galaxy far before the arrival of the Hive fleets. Such supposition, while of course valid, is to one's mind the perfect encapsulation of Fenris. It simply does not make sense in a way that humanity can understand. And then there are the Fenrisian wolves. Wholly remarkable creatures they are, not least for the sheer danger they pose to anything that may encounter them. Phenomenally strong, fast, and resilient, they are, by any metric, intelligent enough to be considered semi-sentient. Astartes of the Space Wolves have 10 millennia of history of cooperation and companionship with these beasts, originating in the affinity of the Primarch Leman Rus with his so-called wolfkin, Freki and Geri, adoptive siblings born of the she-wolf that nurtured the infant Primarch following his fall to the world. Several subspecies exist, from the common Fenrisian wolf to the black-maned wolf, bigger creatures associated with the Fenrisian myth of Morkai, guardian of the underworld, and finally the thunderwolf. The largest of the latter creatures are known to grow to a size comparable to a rhino armored personnel carrier, and even smaller members of this subspecies can bear a fully armored Astartes into battle, as a baseline human would utilize a war equine. One should note, however, that reports of such cavalry units are rare enough to be considered myth by many chroniclers. Indeed, the Space Wolves themselves outright deny the existence of such riders, claiming that outsiders who speak of them engage in ignorant fantasies. What underscores the existence of the Fenrisian wolf is an uncanniness that one is often perplexed others either do not see or prefer not to see. Namely, that the wolf in aspect is largely similar to the extinct Terran genus of Canis lupus, although, as this must be understood, entirely in physical presentation. Based on what records survive of humanity's distant past, the lupus creatures were scarcely larger than canids that we continue to retain in various forms. Yet the Fenrisian wolf looks like them in many respects, albeit to heightened extremes. Their intelligence allows them to think in the abstract, problem-solving with packmates and Astartes both. They have little issues understanding Fenrisian speech, with very little training. While their size may be considered an evolutionary response to the climate of Fenris itself, alongside the countless other predators with which they compete, the concept of the genus Lupus emerging on another world in almost identical form, yet different sizing and capabilities, does not so much strain credulity and possibility as it does shatter them. The galaxy, and life itself, does not operate in such terms. Any investigation into the evolutionary history of the wolf is impossible. The majority of the planet does not, owing to its insane volatility, contain anything approximating a fossil record. The Astartes who lord over Azahaim simply do not permit investigations into the bedrock of this sole continent. We are forced into speculation, mythoscrying, and examination of hearsay, with one thread upon which to pull being a source of especial aggravation for the lords of the icebound world. There are no wolves on Fenris. This statement has been attributed to several, in some cases quite high-ranking, members of the Imperial regime, specifically during the Great Crusade. While it has since fallen out of favor and popular imagination, in large part due to fiat from the Imperial household and the prevailing tides of history, in that halcyon era of Crusade, it was a potent piece of slander and rumor amongst those who utilized it. It is at face value patently absurd. There were the Fenrisian Astartes themselves, the Sixth Legion. Due to their heavy usage of lupine iconography, in keeping with the culture of Fenris, the Legion earned the informal moniker of Space Wolves, which, thanks to the low Gothic vulgarity aping their barbarian-presenting appearances, stuck, and stuck fast. They, of course, never referred to themselves as such, preferring the collective noun of the Rout, but saw no need in expending energy to disavow an uncaring Imperium of that notion. The name has remained with them for 10 millennia, although it is debatable whether the current chapter feels any differently towards it than their progenitor legion did. Thus there were, and are, wolves on Fenris. This is not even considering the beasts themselves. Fenrisian wolves that so much of human culture revolves around on that planet, the kindred of the Primarch, enshrined forever as companions of the Legion and later chapter. They are, in presentation, behavior, wolves. Thus there were, and are, wolves on Fenris. The root of the phrase may lie within the unique Sixth Legion gene element known as the Canis Helix. While all Astartes legions derive unique genetic components from their primarchs, often to the effect of stabilizing their gene seed for implantation and mass recruitment, several had biological mechanisms that were dangerously unstable, or indeed subversive, before the recovery of their primarch. Most notable were, aside from the Sixth, the Ninth Legion, laterally the Blood Angels, but also the Fifth Legion, laterally the White Scars. The Emperor's hand looms large over all of this. The Primarchs are amongst his most famous yet mysterious creations, the bioalchemy of their beginning, an art that is not so much lost as it was only ever the product of a single individual. Even besides, the Sixth Legion were amongst the so-called Trefoil Legions, alongside the 18th and the 20th, a trio of Astartes forces deliberately held apart from the others by the Master of Mankind for wholly unknown purposes. Canis Helix's effects are quite pronounced. It causes an Astartes' canine teeth to extend and harden, allowing them to tear through sheet metal. It toughens their skin to a near leathery consistency, and improves their senses of hearing and scent to far surpass even those of the already heightened Astartes senses. It also notably spikes aggressive instincts within an Astartes. It is likely the reason that the Sixth Legion, before reunification with Leman Russ, were considered amongst the most brutal, but also verifiably least controllable and least disciplined legion. They were the only legion amongst the original 20 that required the presence of dedicated disciplinary officers amongst the rank and file, permitted to dole out as far as summary executions, like the modern Imperial Guard Commissar, should Astartes defy orders too routinely or become uncontrollable in the heat of battle. While the reunification with Leman Russ would ultimately stabilize these efforts, wedding the Canis Helix to the Sixth Legion through a combination of recovered gene seed material and the unique cultural and leadership idiosyncrasies of the Primarch, the gene component does have an altogether darker side. Should a wolf of the Legion, and later the Chapter, be unable to temper his spirit and body, he will become afflicted with the curse of the Wolfen, a terrible fate that sees his body transform into a bestial monstrosity, a vile fusion of Lupid and Astartes, blasphemous in form and warped in mind, more predator thing than man. This profanity upon the human form is a dark secret at the heart of the Chapter's history, a stain upon their supposed mastery of their nigh-inhuman barbarity, although they are far from the only Astartes Chapter that must struggle with persistent genetic instabilities. Given that Russ was the second found Primarch, and his assumption of leadership came with the Provender of Fenris as the Legion's sole fief, the presence of the Wolfen within the culture and collective consciousness of the Sixth Legion is nearly as old as the Imperium, and as are, no doubt, the rumors, suppressed, of their existence to those who were privy to the highest levels of Crusade-era military intelligence, and those within the modern Imperium with similar credentials. Finally, there is the curiosity of Fenris's human population. One may wonder as to how, and indeed why, humanity even continues to persist upon Fenris. Evidence of stellar exodus or Dark Age settlement has been previously discussed. Azahim has clearly been inhabited by humans for millennia before the coming of the Primarch, and laterally his father. At some point during the Age of Strife, perhaps before, it is possible that the planet's human population regressed to their current primitive level of technological and societal advancement. This is, however, merely a supposition. There is no evidence, or at least none has ever been provided, that any form of advanced Dark Age humanity, as we are given to understand it, maintained a persistent presence upon Fenris. The cavern settlements of Azahim have never been explored by modern Imperial explorators, so it is impossible to know if they were naturally formed or developed by the hand of ancient humanity. It is quite possible that Fenrisians have existed upon the world in the same state as they did when the Imperium arrived, and as they do now under the rule of the Chapter. They eke out a semi-nomadic existence, defined entirely by the world's constant cycle of destruction and creation, in ceaseless competition with its predators, its landscape, and each other. The Imperium has never sought to establish peace between the warring clans. It has ever been the stated desire of Russ, and latterly his sons, that such struggles as they endure breed exceptional candidates for Astarte's ascension. Quite how primitives armed with the crudest imaginable weapons, a pre-feudal level of technology and no arable land to speak of, continue to not only exist but thrive upon a world where every single thing vies for their immediate death, beggars belief. It is, a common refrain when discussing Fenris, impossible. So, we have a world that should not be, populated by a people that should not be alive, sharing a planet with wolves that, apparently, aren't. Where is one supposed to find purchase within the tales of Fenris? Upon academic ground that seems to shift as much as the damnable planet's own continents do each year. Magnus the Red, Primarch of the 15th Legion Thousand Sons, whose history with the Wolf King is a tale of hatred and blood reserved for wholly different records than this, believed he knew the ken of it. Within private conversations with his closest sons, Magnus teased his belief that the lupine beasts of Fenris were no animals at all, or rather, that they had once not been animals. The Crimson King was of the belief that the wolves were simply devolved humanity. For just as the Canix Helix can surge from the genome of the 6th Legion, so too did something within the impossible people of Fenris work to claim them, to take their human forms and render them unto beasts. Simply put, there are no wolves on Fenris, because all the wolves are human. Astartes or otherwise. Twisted and broken in mind and body, transformed into animals to better survive upon a world that clearly hates them. Such a tale, lurid in the extreme, has drawn its fair share of criticism from scholars who have possessed clearance levels to examine the Cyclops' writings. Many damn it as ludicrous drivel, a product of both Magnus's overactive imagination and his seething disdain for everything his brother Leman represented. It is certainly slanderous in the extreme, and to even mention it in the presence of the Astartes, be it 6th Legion of old or modern chapter, would no doubt invite immediate death. It has, of course, been almost irrevocably buried within Imperial historiography, surviving only in the most isolated of fragments, lost forever to imagination and contemplation. One will not pronounce upon it. To own the truth, your most humble servant includes the discourse of there are no wolves on Fenris, merely as an illustration of quite how far conception must stretch to reconcile this planet with the material universe in which it dwells. That so many apex predators can arise, apparently, upon a single world, so unlike in form, genotype, or even ecological role, and persist alongside an ancient human population, all upon a world with scarcely any geological stabilities, one draws close to the inescapable conclusion that nothing here is natural. Fenris, or whatever Fenris has been for as long as Imperial memory can relate, was created. It did not evolve to be thus. It was wrought by hands unknown. Fenris is a manufactured thing, akin to a zoological reserve, a place where the most vicious fauna encountered by ancient humanity could be unleashed to dwell beside and compete with each other. Forced interactions between the apex predators of countless worlds, perhaps for nothing more than to see which would emerge victorious. We must then, of course, consider the humanity of the world. There are many planets across the galaxy that bear striking resemblances to distinct cultures we know existed in the ancient past of old Earth, but few do so with such starkness as upon Fenris. Its warrior tribes, their speech patterns, mythotracts, and cultural idioms ape those of a culture recorded in the Scandic regions of Terra, albeit one that existed millennia before even the very first human stellar exodus, purportedly surviving largely in popular imagination alone. From what accounts one has perused of such impossibly ancient records, Fenris is almost a parodic thing of those old imaginings, as if emerging from the lurid mind of a person or people who desired to bring into reality the most heightened and extreme version of something they believed once existed. Which returns us again to the wolves. Their presence, perhaps more than any other, lends credence to one's suppositions. If Fenris was indeed wrought by hands wholly human, then the wolves, for all their size, intelligence, and viciousness, are pastiches of long-lost Terran lupids, cast amongst other beasts as a fevered imagination of untrammeled Dark Age science. If so, then many other of Fenris's beasts would be wholly artificial in origin, developed in laboratoria as part of some grand effort to bring myth and legend into reality. Arcane science bent for study, but possibly merely entertainment. Whatever we know of the Dark Age of technology, we know that the artifice of man was wholly unconstrained, shackled not by empathy, morality, or any such base considerations. The humanity of that great epoch, great and damnable epoch, simply did, because they simply could. Fenris may be one such work, a garish menagerie, impossibly still existent, having survived the death of human progress and the long doom of the Age of Strife, an experiment in reassembled folkloric traditions. In this theory, the humanity of Fenris are perhaps not colonists after all. No descendants of ancient explorers they, no, but game, introduced to the world by its long-dead masters to dwell alongside predators beyond description. It is known that, upon star charts of obscure and perhaps ill provenance, older even than the Age of Strife, the world existed under the name Fenrir Perdita, translated obliquely as Fenris / Forbidden. This the Master of Mankind was no doubt aware of, as aware as he seemingly was of the world's location, given how swiftly so distant a sphere was rediscovered by his Imperium. Should the Emperor have known anything about the true face of Fenris, he never deigned to share it. All we are left with is the world's sheer impossibility, its maddeningly persistent existence. Until such a time as one may further pry open the puzzle boxes of this galaxy of ours, Ave Imperator, Gloria in Excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @oculusimperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.